This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yi. Today, we are talking about mental health at the workplace. You know, we spend almost half our lives working, and it's no wonder then that our work demands and environment affect our mental well-being quite significantly. So how can workplaces help employees to manage things like stress, anxiety, and emotional issues, which all of us go through really on a daily basis? And at the same time, how do we create a workplace that accepts and supports people with ongoing mental health conditions? So in conjunction with the upcoming World Mental Health Day, which falls on the 10th of October, I'm speaking today to Shazmi Ali, Country HR Director from Shell Malaysia, and his colleague, Dr. Edwin Ho, Occupational Health Physician and Country Health Manager, to find out more about staying mentally well at the workplace. If you have any questions, or if you'd like to share any of your experiences in relation to mental well-being at the workplace, you can call us. Our lines are open, 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp them in 018-789-8899, or you can catch us over on Twitter at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. How are the both of you today?
Good afternoon. I'm very well. Thank you for having us. Shay.
Yeah, thank you.
So I'm interested, Dr. Edwin, your title of Country Health Manager is pretty interesting. Can you explain a little bit about what your role is within the context of Shell as a workplace?
Yeah, thanks. It is indeed a very unique position in many corporate companies. I don't think it's something that's there in many organizations, but in Shell, we value our health and safety a lot. And that's also the reason why we have this role as occupational health doctors in the organization, with actually quite a large health team that looks after us, yeah, in many angles. So we are important because we look after not just the health, but we look at policies, we look at the way Shell runs its business, and you know, when it comes to hazards, risk, and you know, we think about the health controls that could be put in place to create a healthier and safer workplace.
All right. So Shazmi, how do you work with Dr. Edwin then?
So
how do you marry this role?
Yeah,
right?
So I lead the HR function, and HR is about people, and Edwin takes care of the health and safety of our people. So we partner each other in ensuring that the policies that we have, the program that we have in Shell, works for our people and keeps our people safe.
All right. When you talk about a health team, Dr. Edwin, is it something like in-house doctors?
So we outsource our clinical doctors. So we don't have a team of in-house clinical doctors, but we have a team that supports the businesses, because we run multiple businesses across the country. And therefore, in that sense, we have people to support each of these, understanding their business operation, understanding the risk that's there, and providing health support. You know, what's the best way to work around it in the healthiest way? So that's what we do here.
Yeah. All right. And of course, oil and gas as an industry, typically your priority, as I understand it, at least, is, you know, occupational safety in terms of preventing industrial accidents and things like that, right? But today we're talking about mental health, which is an interesting layer to understanding the different aspects, I guess, the different perspectives of health. So how do you, Dr. Edwin, view mental health within this larger occupational health umbrella?
Good. So maybe if I can just pull back one step to talk about occupational health, right? It is not it's not a division only for the oil and gas industry. In fact, we have got occupational health physicians and doctors in other industries as well, where health and safety is very important to them, right? So I just want to give credit to the organizations that have this group of people, of experts, and who put them at high priority. Now, when we talk about mental health, I would say it is equally important, all the other aspects of health. So WHO have come up with a definition, quite a good definition, I would say. It's not perfect, but it defines health as three big components: physical, social, and today we're talking about mental health. So they're all interrelated, and they're very, very important in what we do today. In fact, with the whole COVID situation, people are realizing that mental health is gaining even more importance than it used to have. And it could be even more slightly complicated than physical health. That's why in the past we've always seen companies and organizations focus very much on physical health because that was probably the easier way. But now understanding that mental health is very much interrelated to physical and social health, a lot of people are putting this effort there because we want people to perform at their best. And just to run through some statistics, we have 7 over billion people in this world today. And you know what's surprising or what's worrying is that 1 billion people suffer from mental health disorders. Mm. And at the start, until now, every 40 seconds, there is one person who commits suicide due to this. So the stigma is there and the issues are there. But, you know, I think a lot of organizations are starting to consider that mental health is indeed important.
All right. Shazmi, you said that HR is about people. And I'm interested to find out, how do you personally look at mental health issues? Because in order to take care of the well-being of the people in your company, I think you have to have some relation to the issue at hand, don't you?
Sure. And I think you mentioned the right word, the well-being of an employee. And the well-being of an employee is no longer now whether they have fever, cough, etc. It's no longer physical. It's also mental. I think for an organization to succeed and for you to actually show genuine care to your staff, you have to take care both of their physical and mental needs. And that's why we have a variety of programs to ensure that when they step into the office or when they step out of the office, we are still taking care of their mental health. Because I think that's really crucial. A lot of organizations feel that providing basic health care to staff is about giving them access to clinics. You know, if you're not well, you can take medical leave. But a lot of organizations, unfortunately, do not focus on the mental health bit. And that's something which, you know, I'm proud that, you know, Shell, we are really strong in.
How, Dr. Edwin, how would you justify the importance of mental health to a company, you know, not just in terms of daily operations, but also a company's bottom line?
Oh, that's very, very important. So let's flip it around slightly, right? 70% of the population are workers. And, you know, if we consider that that large number of the population of workers, it is very important that we start taking care of them even outside of the workplace, is what Shazmi mentioned, right? And earlier, as I mentioned, mental health is linked to physical and social health, and that's really how people perform at their best. So I liken this to Shell, and in Shell, we are proud to say that we hire the best people. But how do we keep our people at the best? Because they can come in, hired at the best level, but with mental health conditions and with the struggles, it will drop in terms of performance as well. So I think there's a lot of emphasis that has been placed so far in mental health. And because, you know, we know that when we put this emphasis there and we create the right programs and the right strategies, it all leads to better engagement. And from a HR perspective, you know, trust me, I'm sure you know, HR engagement leads to everything else. The bottom line, improved productivity, yeah. It breaks barriers and things like that.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I think if I may add to your question on the bottom line, I think today a lot of organizations, they measure the number of days you take medical leave because the number of days you're away from the office is somehow rather commensurated by your productivity level. Right. However, we want to look at mental health because you could be physically in the office, but mentally you're switched off. So your productivity level could be even more worse than someone who's gone missing for 1 week. So I think it really affects the bottom line.
I want to try and understand a little better how both your departments work together to streamline your policies, you know, because it would be very easy in a company, in a large organization like Shell, for you to be working in silos, for Dr. Edwin to be talking about mental health is important, but HR policies are not in line, you know? Mm. Can you shed a bit more light there?
Sure. So anytime we come up with a new policy that's health related, it's a jointly sponsored policy. So it's not a HR policy, it's not a health. It's jointly sponsored. And when we take these policies to our staff or to our management team, it's again, we go in together. To what you said, the right hand needs to know what the left hand is doing. And that's why working together is really crucial.
All right. You know, when we come back, we'll go for a quick break now. When we come back, of course, we have to talk about the impact of COVID-19 on your employees' mental health and really everybody's mental health. And we'll go more into the kinds of programs that you have to support staff, as you said, you know, when they step into the office and when they step out as well, to support them in terms of their mental health. I have in the studio with me Shazmi Ali, Country HR Director from Shell Malaysia, as well as Dr. Edwin Ho, Occupational Health Physician and Country Health Manager. Also from Shell Malaysia, we're discussing mental health at the workplace. Our lines are open if you'd like to share anything with us, 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. Today, I'm speaking to Shazmi Ali, Country HR Director from Shell Malaysia, and his colleague, Dr. Edwin Ho, Occupational Health Physician and Country Health Manager. We're discussing mental health at workplace, taking a look at how Shell Malaysia is doing it in terms of maintaining a level of mental well-being and also being able to address and support employees when there are mental health crises that come to the surface. If you have questions or thoughts you'd like to share with us on what we're speaking about today, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or drop us a tweet at BFM Radio. I think that mental health has really come to the fore during this pandemic. You know, everybody has realized, if not before already, with all the conversations that we've been having about mental health, but this has really driven home the point that you can't afford to let your mental health lapse, and there are going to be very, very difficult situations and circumstances that will really tax your mental well-being, your resilience, and how well you're able to cope emotionally and mentally, right? So from Shell's experience, you know, what have you heard from your employees? You know, how has the pandemic affected them mentally and emotionally?
So let me take that one, Shazmi. Yeah,
sure.
So, yeah, we'd like to acknowledge and certainly that employees are affected, you know, during these difficult and challenging times, both mentally and emotionally. But let me start by drawing the connection between, you know, our mental health and our emotion. And this could be a little bit technical, but I think it's worth explaining. Through cognitive neuroscience and imaging, you know, we realized that the part of the brain that regulates our emotion is the anterior cingulate cortex. Now, experts have found that uncertainties are very much perceived as error message to this anterior cingulate. And these repeated error message, if it becomes too much, are perceived as uncertainties. Yeah, and these uncertainties is like making a lot of errors, you know. And similarly, and that complex process happens, the amygdala starts to get hijacked. Now, the amygdala is the instinctive response in human. It creates that flight or fight mode, you know, in people. And people start to lose control of themselves. They stop thinking in that situation. So what we've recognized is that the situation is real and it is scientifically linked to the way our brain functions. And so in Shell, what we do is that we continue to provide support throughout the COVID time, where people have opportunities and options to reach out to their line managers, their colleagues, and also professional help if needed. We also talk about ways that they can stay in control of the situation, and that's very important, especially when it comes to such uncertainties as well.
Right.
So that's a bit about how I would say, you know, that the pandemic really affects people's mental and emotional health.
Just want to, I know you said you were going to get technical, but that was pretty technical. So just in English, I guess. Have you seen evidence where when an individual's mental well-being is severely affected, it could affect their ability to make decisions? It could affect, it could impair their ability to act rationally?
Yeah, so I've seen many of these at the workplace, not just limited to COVID, during COVID times, but you know, we've seen great performing employees going really, really low and down. And in fact, even activities of daily living is affected. And you can hear the spouse saying that this person sits at the corner, doesn't speak up, doesn't eat too much, really unkempt. So these are the things that shows that mental health can really affect people, even the best people or even the top people.
Mm. Yeah. Shazmi, at what point does HR step in? You know, do you think you should, you know, are there ways for you to keep tabs, you know, on when an employee's performance starts to flag, right, and swoop in, or do you wait for employees to ask for help? How does that work?
So we have a program called the Employee Assistance Program, so the EAP. We've run this for more than 10 years. We were among the pioneers to do this. So basically it, because we know when it comes to mental health, people are not so forthcoming in sharing, because there's a stigma, there's still a taboo, unfortunately, in our society. So with the Employee Assistance Program, or EAP that we call it, staff can dial into professionals, clinical psychologists, etc., to share their problems, to seek for guidance on what they can do next, on whatever that troubles them. Now, the reason why we have engaged an external party is to ensure staff that their confidentiality and their privacy of the situation that they're facing is never made known to HR or anyone else. So it's a very safe environment for them to be in. And this is something that we feel we will continue. In fact, in the middle of the pandemic, we also opened this up to family members, which is again not commonly heard of from other organizations, because we realize when you are at home, the one that's getting stressed might not necessarily be just the shell employee, but it's also their family members.
Of course.
Yeah. And when you brought work to home, then our conducive working environment, we need to also create a conducive home environment. And that's where, you know, we've allowed the EAP to be used by family members as well.
All right. Do you believe that there is such a thing as the ideal work-life balance, that you can separate them?
So I have a very unpopular opinion about this. So I don't believe in work-life balance, because I believe your life is way more important than your work. Mm. So work, you know, brings food to the table, gives you enjoyment and satisfaction, but your life should be always more important than your work. And so I'm not a fan of work-life balance.
And for me, you know, I think in today's world where people look at work as part of their life, I think it's very difficult to draw that line between work and life. And I commonly tell people, you know, it's more about how you manage work-life integration, yeah, rather than work-life balance. And that's been our focus as well in Shell.
I also think that the reality is that your employee is an individual with family, yeah, issues, with relationships, with whatever baggage they bring with, yeah, them, right? So they can't check that at the door when they come to work as well. But you mentioned, under the Employee Assistance Program, your employees have access to an external resource. They can reach out to clinical psychologists and mental health professionals. Yeah. What are the other interventions that are available under this program?
Yeah. So the Employee Assistance Program, I would say, falls on the extreme end of how we would provide support, because that's the last measure, so to say. Yeah. And before anybody goes into that level, you know, we have many other programs to promote resilience, to promote better stress management. We also have programs to help create the right environment, the workspace. And you probably have not heard of this term, but we call it psychological safety. So we promote psychological safety in our workplace because we want people to feel safe to speak up. No matter what happens, they are able to speak up, because that helps them, you know, releasing and speaking up. There is an interesting term that people use, you know, it's called catharsis, but it's really a psychological term. It is when people feel better after speaking up, and just speaking up is great for them. So that's a bit about how we arrange our programs. I think the best analogy I can share with you is that it's compared to our physical health. So how do we take care of our physical health every day? We exercise, you know, we sleep well and we eat healthy. But when we get sick physically, we go see the doctor and we get medication. So seeing the doctor and getting medication is really the other end of the spectrum. And that's what our Employee Assistance Program is best suited for. But while we are healthy and while we want to keep ourselves healthy, that's when our other programs come in. And that's the few examples that I've shared.
Sorry, other programs apart from the EAP?
Apart from the EAP.
All right.
Building resilience, having group strategies and engagement, time out by teams, you know, instead of just talking about work every day, we have businesses and teams talking about other things, you know, building resilience. We have got multiple topics. We've got ways to incorporate these topics into discussion points where teams can run it on their own. We call it the Resilience Program. And the Resilience Program is a very interesting program because we don't learn from any expert. We don't have to invite an expert out. we have our people sharing with each other. It's a simple term we call peer-to-peer experiential learning, where people learn from each other. And, you know, during the most difficult and challenging time, each one has their own ways of dealing with them. You know, and if you think about it, this is what people really enjoy, because this is practical and not just theoretical. Because, you know, you can hire the best person to come in and give you 10 steps theory on how you could manage your stress. But in reality, and if you put in that situation, maybe none of those steps might work. But if there's a colleague who's been in that situation and got out of it successfully and well, wow, that's going to be so, you know,
and powerful. And then, you know, if I may, you don't feel I'm the only one with the problem, mm-hmm. right? Yes. It's a shared what I'm facing, maybe Edwin's also facing, or maybe I can learn something from Edwin. And it's not that I'm just keeping everything to myself.
Mm. Correct. And if you're the learner, you can choose from a variety of people who's sharing out there. So it's like a buffet learning style. You know, you pick which one you like. And if Xiaoyik, you say, oh, that's very powerful. I love that point that Xiaoyik shared. And then if Xiaosmi says something, I say, maybe that doesn't work for me, but I could try something else.
Correct.
So that's how we run our resilience program. And just one of it.
You know, the fact that it's structured and that, you know, employees have to build that into their routines and so that it doesn't fall by the wayside, right? And so that it's consistent and it has an impact. How do employees feel about this? I can imagine that for some, perhaps initially, it might seem like, oh, this is just one more thing to add to my plate, you know? Just me, how have employees been receiving it?
I think from feedback that we receive, employees are very appreciative of it, right? And they are also appreciative for the fact that we have an avenue in case we need to use something. A lot of times, you might not use it at that point of when you first get to know about the program, but eventually, either you or your friend will use it. And I think that's so far very good feedback that we have received from the program.
All right.
And in fact, if I may just add, we don't just talk about mental health on its own. We actually term it, or we actually put it under a broader umbrella of care. And in Shell, we are very proud to say that we care about our employees. And it's not just what we say, but it's what we do.
So actions,
our programs are based on care, because we have seen the scientific evidence and considerable synergy between human performance and a caring environment. And it really produces high quality outcome. Of course, without a clear purpose, care alone may not drive performance or business outcomes, as you mentioned. But our purpose of care is to improve this human performance. And in combination, the two constructs and reinforces each other and are open to synergistic implementation. So what I'm trying to say here is that when you put mental health as an avenue of care to people, people feel cared for. And when they feel cared for, they feel great about it. And when they feel great about it, they are able to perform and give their best.
Mm. So is there a way to measure the impact of your programs, not only EAP, but the other things that you're doing?
I think in general, we have an internal staff survey that we do. So we don't specifically ask, do you feel cared? Do you feel, that's almost a very leading question. But we see from our employee engagement scores, and that's a consistently score that keep on increasing. Throughout the period of pandemic, we ran multiple care programs. So I give an example, as people were stuck at home and getting stressed, you know, we had online yoga, online exercises. We had, how do you manage your children while you're at home? We had online.
There is no manual for that.
No, but it's all about people sharing it, right? So I've got three kids that I knew, you know, how it was. Mm. We had painting contests for children so that the children can also get occupied. These are all ways that we show care. Mm. We even had a stand-up comic that come to share or rather do a show for us. And these are things that we do to show that we care for you. And we do a survey at the end of it and say, no. What programs work, what programs do not work, and from the feedback, we plan the next round of programs.
And I would say almost every program, we got a great feedback the end of it.
It was
very well received. I mean, how many people actually put the effort to do it? And I think that's what the employees are really appreciating here.
I'm curious, was there an uptick in employees reaching out for counselling and therapy during this period?
So we kept a close eye, in all honesty. There was a small surge in the beginning of the pandemic, and then it normalize again. And our aim is never to make it zero, because we realize people will be stressed at one point of time. It's about giving them that opportunity to reach out.
All right. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we will look at how companies can improve working conditions, because it's one thing to have programs in place when employees need support, but you also need to look at what employees are going through on a daily basis that affects their mental well-being. So when we come back, we'll discuss that with Shazmi Ali, Country HR Director from Shell Malaysia, as well as Dr. Edwin Ho, Occupational Health Physician and Country Health Manager, also from Shell Malaysia. I need to stop saying that so much.
Yes, you don't need
to. You're both from Shell Malaysia. We're discussing mental health at the workplace today. If you have any thoughts you'd like to share with us, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Call us 0377-32900 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. In the studio with me today to discuss mental health issues at the workplace, I have with me from Shell Malaysia, Shazmi Ali, Country HR Director, as well as Dr. Edwin Ho, Occupational Health Physician and Country Health Manager. Call us if you have anything you'd like to share on these issues. We'd like to hear about personal experiences, you know, or anything you'd like to ask. 0377-32900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Just very quickly, I'd like to look at this question from Dee on WhatsApp, who's asking, you know, mental health problems can be hard to identify. So perhaps, Dr. Edwin, if you could share, what are some of the telltale signs that we can look out for?
Craig, I think that's a great question. I think it's very important for all of us to participate in supporting each other's mental health. It's not an individual responsibility, and it's not just the line manager's responsibility. I think it's all of us together as a society and as colleagues. We can support each other. So in this question here, you know, I think it's interesting, because we're not out here to create more psychologists or psychiatrists who are experts in identifying this problem. So I'm not going to go through a list of things that you need to look out for: a certain way of appearance, a certain way of behavior. I would like to say that the most important thing is recognizing change and differences in people. And that is the key to identifying and helping people with mental health conditions. The struggles are real in these people, and it don't come up very, very obviously. But they will have changes in the way they speak, for example. They may be more negative than before, or if they're typically a negative person, they might suddenly become more positive in the way they wear their clothes. You know, it might be a certain way, but it might be different in other ways. In terms of the way they eat, for example, they might suddenly lose appetite. So what's key here is to identify the changes and the differences that you see in people and reach out to them, you know, first offering help and first offering yourself to speak to. But be persistent. That's my next point. You know, people might not come up the first time, but you know, after due progress, when you've communicated and you've approached them all over some time, they will definitely in the end give in, and that's when you can make a big difference to them.
And you know, I think line managers here, as well as team members, line managers also have a big responsibility, because they have their finger on the pulse of how everyone in the team is behaving, coping. And Shazmi, can you shed a bit of light on, you know, I know you've talked about employee assistance programs and other programs that employees have access to, but you know, over and above that, there's your daily pressures, your deadlines, your work demands, you know, stepping in as well when other colleagues are struggling during these difficult times, right? And how do you balance that, being able to continuously improve working conditions?
Yeah.
You know, in an industry like this, I can imagine how stressful it must be. And is there even a chance to dial back and say, I need to take a step back, you know, for my well-being?
No, I think we do. And I think one way that we see a lot of employees take is whenever they want to take a break is to go on a sabbatical, which is very common in Shell. The other thing is, we speak specifically about the pandemic. When the pandemic happened and all of us were in lockdown, one of the earliest things we did was to tell line managers to go back to their staff and reevaluate what are the priorities of their work. Because we realized whatever that you were planning to do, you're not going to be able to do while working from home, because there are challenges. So that was one of the biggest things we did, which was a bit of a surprise even for me. That, you know, reevaluate back your goals, see what are your priorities, what is no longer a priority, please drop them. Mm. Yeah. So let's focus on the big one. Second, we had special module for line managers that we communicated on a weekly basis on, you know, to pick up telltale signs of, you know, how do you recognize if your staff is not doing well? Do regular check-ins. So what used to be, for example, monthly meetings became very short, 15-minute weekly catch-up with teams. Some of them had to do daily just to make sure, are you okay working from home? Not to talk about work. Mm-hmm. Are you working from home? Are you okay? And when we heard feedback that was some staff say, oh, you know, I'm renting a room, or I don't have the right equipment, then we did a workplace assessment. And if you meet the criteria, then we gave a certain allowance for people to buy the right equipment, the right tools, so that you are comfortable working from home.
All right. Can I address this question that's just come in, someone who wants to remain anonymous? Despite company policy, it's not always easy for employees to confide to their boss or their team about any mental health issues they may be facing. How do you facilitate this?
This is indeed a very interesting question, because it's a perfect segue from the previous question about how we develop our line managers. Now, even pre-COVID, and Shazmi has shared how much we've done during COVID times, but even pre-COVID, we have run multiple programs to upskill our line managers and leaders in the organization. And you'd be surprised, but we've even had mental health sessions with our line managers to bring them up in terms of competencies, in terms of their understanding of what mental health is, and telling them that, you know, if there's something wrong with people, as line managers, you might even be the first line of that when people come to you. So how do you get them up to speed? In our Shell business operations in Cyberjaya, we've ran a fantastic program over the last year. And that program was a real great turnout, because the feedback was also fantastic, because the line managers felt so much more competent in handling and dealing with mental health situations and condition. Now, specifically back to this, and I mentioned it a bit earlier as well, you know, we focus a lot today on creating a psychological safe environment. And that's deliberate. It's not something foreign, because many of us say, hey, look, if you have anything, speak up, you know, let me know. So that is a way of creating psychological safety. But for us in Shell, we take this very seriously, and we've gone many steps deeper to talk about this. In fact, we ran a session globally on how we could improve our psychological safety in the last safety day that we had. And now this is very important, because we realize that in these kind of difficult times, people need to speak up, people want to speak up, and others must listen. And, you know, we refrain from judging, we refrain from being too quick to respond or react. But we take our time and we train our people how to deal with this situation and how to create that psychological safe environment.
All right.
So just to add, if someone wants to confide in the manager, we have trained the line managers. But if they're not comfortable, we will not force them. And that's when they reach out to the employee assistance program,
yep,
which is a neutral third party.
All right. All right. Yeah. We have a question here from Zia, who wants to know whether local culture has a role to play in ensuring psychological safety. Not sure whether she means corporate culture or actual, you know, like Malaysian culture, which is an interesting aspect as well. You know?
So we do see there is an element of Asian culture, if you may say, where, you know, mental health is still a stigma, it's still a big taboo, people are not, you know, opening up. And what we've done, which I thought was pretty successful, we've had very senior leaders come up very openly and share their struggles with mental health. And when you see your senior leaders do it, and they are not stigmatized, and they are not, you know, shorthanded in any way whatsoever, I think it encourages people to come up from and speak up. And, you know, one example that we've had our VP for diversity and inclusion has gone, she's gone all over LinkedIn, within Shell, external, to say, these are the challenges I face. It's normal. It's acceptable. But it's how do you overcome it?
And exactly on point to that is that we recognize that stigma is real. And I think many of us might not recognize that as organizations or company. But the thing is, in Shell, we notice and we know that this stigma is real. And so what we do is we say, we need to put effort to break this stigma down. Yes, there is cultural and background factors that play a part in it or play a role in it. But if we actively seek to change this culture with the steps, as Shazmi has mentioned, now you see leaders and you see people speaking up, going on social media, talking about their mental health, talking about their challenges. It is okay to say, I'm not okay. And in fact, that's the theme of our program in Shell that we have, I'm not okay.
All right. Yeah. We have an interesting comment here from Chan, who pointed out how, you know, in some Nordic countries, which some of them rank among the so-called happiest nations, they have created social networks that support each other and ensure that all is well and happy. But Chan says that, you know, maintaining the constant high level of happiness or well-being can sort of have an adverse effect. I suppose it can indirectly create pressure on the individual in the community to
be happy.
to maintain that level, you know. Could it be counterproductive? This is quite an interesting philosophical discussion, I suppose.
Maybe I'll take that first. Yeah.
I mean, it links to your point about it's okay to not be okay, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, we have a slider in Shell to say that there are times where we are at our best. We call it thriving. There are times when we're just okay, but there are times when we struggle. And if we don't take care of ourselves when we struggle, we're going to slide down the scale to burnout or mental ill health. And our idea here is to keep ourselves in that top zone, okay and thriving. So you're not expected to be thriving 100%, but there are many different ways to keep yourself at the top. And it starts with taking care of yourself. And may I just pull this back to how we in Shell celebrate World Mental Health Day. You know, in Shell, we took slightly a different approach to World Mental Health Day. The theme in the global scale is that, you know, we should invest more in mental health, but we're going deeper into that because we say investing by starting to care for yourself. And caring for yourself is little ways that you can constantly be okay or be thriving. It is about taking that little frequent breaks, things that matter to you. Some people may say watching a movie is great. Some people may take a nap and feel recharged or energized after that. Some people may go out for a run. You know, different people have different ways of taking care of themselves. But what we say to people is start by taking care of yourself. Find that little elements in your life that brings you joy. Find that little elements in life that makes you happy again so that you can find that you're at your best. And that's what we spoke earlier as well, constantly being at your best. There are ways to do it. So it is not impossible. And I think it should not be counterproductive in any way if we don't put that kind of pressure on people.
Can I flip that though and say that, you know, some may argue then that it's your personal responsibility to take care of your own well-being. Don't take out company resources to do it. You know, don't depend on others around you to pick up your slack, so to speak. And I'm playing devil's advocate here. You know, what's the argument to that?
Yeah, no, I think just like most organizations that I know, and I've been in HR for 20 years right now, they all have some sort of a health coverage. I think the only difference is most organizations today do not have a mental health coverage. So the same logic, why they have a health coverage to make sure that you are fit to come to work. But we're seeing is now extended to mental health. So not only you are fit, but you are also mentally fit to come to work, you know, and do your role. So I think it is the responsibility of the organization, but that doesn't mean that the individual doesn't have any responsibility at all. Yeah, it has to start care for self and then the organization caring for you.
So in Shah, I spoke about this, you know, we care about our people. And the biggest reason we care about people is because we believe that instead of this person saying that, you know, to stop spending resources on these people with mental health conditions, I think we believe that people are our biggest resources. And we need to take care of our biggest resources. And that means that you have to care about their physical, their mental, and their social health. So there's no divide in that sense.
All right. Admittedly, you are a large organization with you know, the resources that you need at hand. Shazmi, can you share some thoughts on maybe, you know, suggest how smaller companies, not large MNCs like yourself, how could smaller companies, especially SMEs, manage staff's mental health, you know, with their limited resources?
Yeah, so firstly, the resources are available online. A lot of the resources are free and available online. If they can afford an EAP program, well and good. But if they can't, they can do a lot of the sub-programs that we have run. But it's important that those programs are run. I don't think it's an exclusive boys club of MNCs that can run an EAP. I think a lot of Malaysian organizations have some semblance of it. There are a lot of apps to today where it's not as expensive as an EAP program, where employees can actually type in an app that they can download, and and that message goes through a third party to check. And so there are a variety of mediums and a variety of tools available for organizations or even startups to use.
Yeah, I would say it first begins with that commitment, leadership commitment, and that want to do something about it. Once you want to do something about it, you'll find a way. And I've learned that since young. So, and just to add on to Shazmi, there's a lot of materials on WHO. WHO have partners with various parties, and as we launch World Mental Health Day on the 10th of October, you'll get all those materials there as well for free.
I think the other thing is, for a lot of other big corporations, like Shell, for us to also play a part and share our best practices to different organizations. I think Edwin and I are always speaking at different conferences, sharing what we do in Shell and see how that can be applied to other organizations.
Are your best practices available as a resource publicly?
Not publicly, but via us. Mm. And I know Edwin and I have never shied away from sharing any of our good practices.
I mean, the fact that we're here on BFM today shows that we are very happy to share. And we want everybody's mental health to be at their best.
Do you have a final message for upcoming World Mental Health Day? Trust me.
Start with care for yourself, and then it's okay to say I'm not okay.
All right.
Okay. And for me, I know many of us haven't flown for a long time, but think about this. When you're in the airplane, when the oxygen mask drops, you put it over yourself first. And that's a very important, meaningful message, because you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of the concerns of others and of others. So I would echo Shazmi and say you will do well only if you start taking care of yourself first.
All right. And before we wrap up, a final message from Zia, who just WhatsApped in to add that the Malaysian Mental Health Association runs workshops on mental health first aid training for workplaces. So that's another good resource that can be checked out. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been Shazmi Ali, Country HR Director, and Dr. Edwin Ho, Occupational Health Physician and Country Health Manager. Both of them are from Shell Malaysia. We've been discussing mental health at the workplace. You've been listening to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.